When I started doing comedy, I used to knap less. I used to speak more Shetland. And I actually had audience members in Glasgow going, I can't understand what she's saying. Like,
but coming from Glaswegian, it must be infuriating.
I was actually angry. I was like, just open your ears and listen. Like, this is one of your Scottish
And
accents.
Also, have you heard yourself? Have you heard the way you talk yourself?
I wish I'd said that at the time.
Welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. I have a comedian from a faraway place, but still in the UK. That is Maria Lane Robertson.
Hi.
Hi. Hello. All right, it's a bit awkward because we're in the same room, suddenly we're not talking to each other directly, but we're doing
the podcast. We are the generation who's so used to looking at your phones, so we could just like talk like this.
And also, we had a bit of incident in the lift because we're going on the fifth floor and then the fire alarm started. But the fire alarm never started before I got to the studio. So I thought, this has to be a real one. It can't be just a drill. And the lift, instead of opening a door, it just took us down to the ground.
But it called us firemen. So I was like, do we have to fight this fire now? Because I will. I will.
I would think if that's the case, that delay the recording. I hope at least the firemen are fit. And they totally are fit, but I hope they are good looking.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
Every time I walk past a fire station, do you know when you get those fire stations with all the big double doors for all the trucks to go in the native?
Yeah.
And when I walk past, I always slow down to have a good look. Yeah. But I'm like, this is probably the worst place in the world to walk slowly a fire engine station. Just go.
But see, they are good looking, but sometimes I wonder because they have so many layers, right? No, it's not. I just say like their clothes must smell. I mean, like they're good to look at, but.
Well, this will come out wrong.
It will. They probably won't go on it.
But, like, we have this festival in Shetland, this fire festival.
Ah, you revealed that you're from Shetland. No, you've done nothing wrong. Basically, I wanted to say I have some friends. They are massive geography geeks.
Nerds.
They geek out on places.
Absolute nerds.
They're absolute nerds that get geek out on places. It will be an adventure for them to visit. So I know some of them will be absolutely jealous today because I'm talking to a living Shetlander.
Hi. Yeah, sorry. I can't go like 2 minutes without mentioning Shetland. It's like...
But that's kind of why you're here. That's not the only reason you're here. No. So,
I'm just Shetlander for this podcast.
Yeah, the only...
Ali Bean was busy.
Who is Ali Bean?
A fiddler. A very good fiddler.
What is a fiddler?
Playing fiddle.
I thought fiddler is like, no, it's not.
What action is that when you stick your two fingers up and wiggle them?
I thought fiddler had a sexual connotation.
Oh, yeah, that's really plagued our musical genre, our traditional music genre.
Why do we start a bunch of fiddlers up in Shetland? I don't know.
I never am rude.
So Marjolaine is from Shetland, administration-wise, is a county in Scotland.
Yes.
It's a couple of hundred miles off Scotland. The biggest city you're close to is actually in Norway, Bergen. Shetland is an archipelago, a group of islands. Taiwan is an island. We have our smaller offshore islands too. And the first time I met someone from the offshore island called Penghu Pescadores, and she studied in my university, in my program, when she said, whenever I have to come to Taiwan, and I say to her, but you are Taiwanese. She's like, yeah, but I'm more like Penghunese, you know. For us, you are all Taiwanese. And it's the same thing with Shetland. So legally, you're in Scotland, but you consider yourself Shetlandic first.
Yes.
Are you part of Scotland? You don't really mind, but you wouldn't say you're Scottish first.
No, we'd say we're Shetland, and the mainland for us is mainland Shetland, and Scotland is Dunsooth. And then it's funny because then when you break off into Shetland, like there's an isle called Fair Isle.
Yeah.
Fair Isle is one of the Shetland Islands. It's quite far away. And in Fair Isle, they call us Shetland and Shetlanders because they're Fair Isle. That's an island of 60 people. Yeah. So it just gets smaller and smaller and smaller, like Russian dolls.
Yeah, so
identity.
The idea is that the mainland always think the island's a part of them. When they realize the island have a separate
and
identity,
they're like, ew, no.
But the irony is that a bigger island would say, how dare you think we would think we're part of you automatically? And it turns around, they reverse the role. They just assume even smaller offshore island think they're part of it. But people... Is it people in the Shetland or on the Shetland?
Oh my God, my brain just imploded because when you get it wrong, everyone gets so mad at you. And people from Shetland don't get it wrong, but now I'm freaking out because I'm overthinking it. I say I'm from Shetland and I live in Shetland.
In Shetland. And there's one thing that will annoy people from the Shetland is the Shetland singular and it's not the Shetlands.
Yes.
Or you can say the Shetland Islands, but it's just the Shetland, okay?
The Shetland.
But if you absolutely want to annoy them, you know what to do right now. Anyway, so Marjolaine is from Shetland and there are only 23 million people in Shetland.
23,000.
23 million is Taiwan. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. My brain is not functioning.
23 million in Taiwan.
Yeah.
What is the land mass of Taiwan?
Land mass? Oh, it's smaller than Scotland, was slightly bigger than Wales.
23 million.
I know. And then half of the island is mountains, so majority of people are crammed to half of the land.
There must be very tall buildings.
And that's why I escaped. It's too crowded.
Wow, so for you, is London less crowded?
Yes, although there are certain spots in London that has got to the point where I feel like I'm back in Asia. Wow. For example, Oxford Circus, even I would avoid it.
Yes, I have been there. There's no circus.
No.
Neither's Piccadilly. They're a waste of your time. But yeah.
No, so I say my friend will be absolutely geek. I was like, what? You're talking to a living, an actual Shetlander. One out of 23,000. They're like such a rare animal. I'm sorry to say.
But I've never thought of it like that before. I love it.
You're
like a shiny.
On the map, when you see a unrealistic map, they will cut and just put a little box of Shetland. And apparently this kind of map is no longer allowed. It's banned in Scotland. You can't print a map of the UK without showing the actual distance between Shetland and the mainland.
I feel so bad because I actually had a huge part in that.
In that banning?
I don't think I had a huge part, but basically I made a sketch for the BBC years before about guess out the box. Like, what is this box for? What's the reason for the box? And I was like, oh, it's a testing site for the new James Blunt album. Just stupid stuff like that. The sketch did quite well and I got interviewed and stuff about the box. I'm a massive map nerd.
You studied archaeology.
I studied archaeology. I also did geography and I also did nautical studies at school. I love a good detailed map.
And you wanted to become a town planner at some point in your life, right?
Yeah, I love maps. So I think the more detailed, the better. So actually, I kind of didn't mind the box because it meant we could have a closer up look at Scotland with more detail. But I accidentally became a voice in the movement against the box.
But it makes sense though, because the box doesn't show how far it is. Like if you want to see a map of America, how do you show Alaska and Hawaii, for example?
Yeah.
You may have a chance the whole North America is presented. So you see how far in terms of distance Alaska is from the rest of the 48 states. But Hawaii is always a little bit like a litter, a droplings, and just put it on the corner. And it's never fair. But imagine,
they shouldn't have Hawaii.
And yeah, it was a kingdom on its own, right?
Yeah, right.
But if you were to portray where Hawaii really is, and you can see how far it is from the mainland of USA, and I think it gives people a more realistic idea. People never see Shetland, how far north it is from Scotland, so they will underestimate the distance. And in that, if there, for example, is a policy of subsidizing travel from mainland Scotland to Shetland, people who have no real idea how far and how difficult it is are more likely to oppose, for example. So your perception of the map does change your political opinion on certain things.
I never thought about it like that before, Quanwen.
No, but it's a valid point.
Yeah, it's true. Because then people realize, oh, this is why they need money off their airfares.
Yeah, and if you really think it's unfortunate, then just don't possess it.
Also, my hope is that we look so far away, it puts off people from buying holiday homes. Don't do it. We're not your holiday home destination.
You can do like Barcelona did, just like fight water gun at them. Like, psh,
psh. Really?
Yeah, they're doing that in Barcelona right now.
Well, getting rid of holiday home buyers.
I think against tourists.
Tourism. No, tourism good if you, you know, support an existing hotel.
Yeah.
Or B&B. But holiday homes are
It's not
stuff.
A very good idea to have a holiday home when you have to take 12 hours of boat trip to get to the island. Yeah. I don't think it's very realistic.
And we're every year.
And that's when that's a good weather. Yeah. When it's
hurricane,
bad.
Hurricane force winds in winter when you might come home back to your holiday home in June and it doesn't have a roof, you know?
Yeah. So today's guest, Marjolaine Robertson. I want to introduce you like in IMDb.
Okay.
Marjolaine Robertson was the Scottish Speaker of the Year in 2022 or 3?
2?
She was on the list of a hot 100 influential people, cultural sector in Scotland. She was the finalist in BBC New Comedian Awards in 2022, finalist in Funny Women in 2022, that's right.
I'm very good at running up.
Yeah, and she has a Wikipedia page. Do you know who wrote it? Like, who organized it?
I actually met the person who took the picture for it. Because you can't use an existing picture on Wikipedia. It has to be original.
Oh.
That's why people's Wikipedia photographs are so bizarre. And it is, oh, because they can't just cut something from a headshot. It needs to be for Wikipedia.
Yeah, because that Wikipedia page, the photo tend to have an amateurish paparazzi feel to it.
Yeah. So the gentleman was like, can I take your picture? And I said, yes, but only if I can have my eyes shut. And he's like, what? So that's why my photo, I'm like this with my eyes shut.
Where did you meet that gentleman?
After the show.
After the show. And he's the one of the contributor that wrote your Wikipedia page.
Yeah, and I always was excited at the prospect of having a Wikipedia page because you can edit it. And I wanted to put a lot of things on it. But I'm banned from editing Wikipedia because I have put on one too many lies. Because I used to edit lots of pages on Wikipedia and just put nonsense in.
Right. And what was a lie? What was a lie that got you trouble?
I don't know, because I used to do it a lot. I used to just lie in bed and put funny things in other people's pages.
That's the one downside of being a comedian. You feel like it's okay to lie. Of course, you can lie on stage, but off the stage in real life, it's a different
matter. It was always just like, they're addicted to like adopting rescue dogs from Pluto. Like just something completely inoffensive, just like the most ridiculous, silly things.
Yeah,
but enough to get me banned. My IP address is now recognized by Wikipedia.
So now that I have the cover whole accolades, I'm going to say half of my podcast listener are actually not from the UK. So they, if they don't know you, I think they have a vague idea of a Scottish accent. They may think you have a Scottish accent, but you don't actually. You're talking to me in your quite neutral, talking to Southerner accent right
now. I'm knapping.
Knapping. I have it. I promise you.
No way.
Knapping.
The research.
Yeah.
This notepad's adorable.
Just to prove I did.
Knapping.
Knapping is a word in a Shetland describing how they automatically assume people don't get them in the way they talk originally. So they will fit their accent according to the person they are talking to.
Kwanwen, this is the nicest research ever.
Really? What?
Yeah. I don't know. It's just very thorough and sweet.
Aww.
And that's a better way of explaining it than I do.
Can I have a wee smurigan? You understand the pronunciation? Wow!
Imagine, come on to my podcast and kiss me.
Well, obviously, I thought Me Too never happened. No, I thought I could get away with it because I'm gay. No. Wow, because I see it's been a while. I'm so excited by
kisses.
No. Why? This podcast is so filthy today. No.
Kisses.
It's been a while before a guest went on. I researched into the Wikipedia page. Because in the beginning, I remember I used to look up, oh, this language, how many people speak it, and what's the influence of the language, and where does the language come from, right? And I haven't done it for a while because I've recorded quite a few episodes. Some of the language start to repeat, some of the accents start repeating. But I thought, okay, Marjolaine is from Shetland. What is a Shetland accent? Because I'm fully aware, every time you talk to different people when I'm around, your accent shifts. For example, when I was trying to listen to you on the Some Love podcast with the lovely Scottish lads, the three of them, you had a much stronger gloss, a generic Scottish accent for that episode. I can understand, but sometimes I have to think back to make sure the word you pronounce is the one I'm thinking. For example, I don't know whether it's a Scottish thing or a Shetland thing. You say a house, you say a hoose.
Hoose,
is that right? And I can work it out from the context, but it just takes me an extra second to make sure, okay, you're definitely talking about a house. When you talk to me, your accent get even milder because you are, I was not making an attempt, but you are nicely accommodating my way of speaking. And that's called knapping from the Shetland.
Yeah, and I think it's funny because my dad is a Shetlander, but my mom is Dutch. So I grew up in a household where there's Shetland dialect, but also the way my mom speaks.
The way your mom speaks. You can't be more condescending than that. I could feel.
Oh my gosh. Her voice is so funny. I've got a recording of it on my phone.
Was your mom abducted to Shetland to diversify the gene pool? She was like, well, you need to.
By the way, I've got your ticket to Shetland. No, but yeah, so my mum was just doing the classic old holiday of hitchhiking around Scotland, and her brother was like, oh.
So this is a warning to the single ladies. You think you just go for hitchhiking and you ended up...
Oh, you'll be whisked off your feet as soon as you arrive in Shetland. I'll be like, fresh blood, tie it down. Yeah, so it's funny. So I'm used to code switching, I think is the technical name for it, when you change how you're speaking so you're always understood.
But do you talk to your mum in Dutch? No, you talk to her in...
No. I've got an elder sister and a brother, and she tried to teach them Dutch, and they always respond in English. So she just gave up when it came to me.
Did you even have a chance?
I ended up moving to Amsterdam for a year. So I was like, this would have been really helpful. And I can speak a bit of Dutch. It's almost frustrating, because I can understand people talking to me in Dutch and I'm like, can't really respond.
So your mom spoke to you in...
English.
I thought you would say whatever she was talking about.
Well, it kind of is. Like, she's like, hello, how are you? This is your mother. How are you, Marjolein? Are you coming home today? That's exactly how she sounds. Ah.
So now that I've covered her accolades, I'm going to say this is normally how the podcast will start if I am not in such a weird situation.
I don't know why. I always do this.
I feel like I've gathered your energy somehow. So it seems irrelevant to ask the question now that we talk so much about it. But I'm going to ask the questions to see where it goes. So Marjolein, do you feel like when you speak English that you have an accent?
No, I think I sound American when I talk like this.
You think you're not American?
I think I said, this is what I call my American voice, and it comes from a different part of my throat than my Shetland voice.
Yeah.
It's actually more tiring, this voice on my vocal cords, so when I speak Shetland.
Oh.
I think Shetland comes from a different part of my throat, and it feels nicer.
But you didn't answer me yes or no, because you're now doing knapping with me. You're not even...
No, I don't think I have a strong accent like this in my head, but... I think this is my neutral. I think I say neutral and I could slip in most places.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, because we were talking about the concept of knapping, like adapting to whoever you're talking to and make, how do I say it? You don't copy the other person's accent, but you move
your... I hope not, because this will become a very problematic podcast.
Mickey Overman say the same thing. I was like, do it. No, you're moving your accents to where you think the recipient is most likely to understand, right? And that's why when you talk to the lads on Sun Love podcast, so they're all Scottish, you move to Scottish enough for them. But then when you cross the border, not talking to me, someone who's not from here, you're turning into even Americanized just for me.
Hello, Kwon Wen. How are you?
it's a lovely, gorgeous
day in London.
See, I see your clip and when you perform in backyard comedy. That's not the same accent you did on the Sun Love podcast, for example.
Well, this is what I find is fun is Shetland for found. When I started doing comedy, I used to knap less. I used to speak more Shetland. And I actually had audience members in Glasgow going, I can't understand what she's saying. Like,
but coming from Glaswegian, it must be infuriating.
I was actually angry. I was like, just open your ears and listen. Like, this is one of your Scottish
and
accents.
Also, have you heard yourself? Have you heard the way you talk yourself?
I wish I'd said that at the time when the things got said to me. But then,
do you not see the irony in that?
I know. And what I found is that when I'm doing gigs, it's like you can't afford... to lose an audience in the setup.
Yeah.
And there's some English accents where, and I'm glad I like accents and regional voices in comedy. I think it enriches the scene. But I always find there's some accents, like different London accents or like different English accents, where they can speak quite broadly and people are used to their voices through television that they'll make the time for them. But I feel when I'm doing Shetland dialect, I just can't afford to slip in a Shetland word because I'll lose them on
setup. Can I hold your hand right now? That's the whole point of this podcast. This is why the podcast existed in the first place.
I'm holding my own head.
But knapping is supposed to be subconscious. Is it a conscious choice?
It's definitely subconscious. Because I get less and less Shetlands, like the longer I spend down here and the further south I get.
Yeah.
So it's really funny.
But in terms of performing, would you be thinking over, for example, you're about to get on the stage for a show in London and you're about to get on stage for a show in Edinburgh or Glasgow, would you mentally think where my accent should be then? Because I think that to perform in London and perform in Glasgow, there must be a difference in how you come across.
I'm getting slightly less conscious of it new because I'm gigging more in England than I ever have before. Mm. Like in the last year or just over a year, I've come down here a lot. And I think that the voice I'm culturing doing here is when I use more up in Scotland as well. And it's funny because there's some routines I used to do where I'd find it really difficult to do on stage because there's some aspects of Shetland life that I've always spoken about in dialect, like working with the sheep. Sheep work is something that's been something I always spoke about with my dad and I always spoke about with other Shetlanders and always spoke about it in dialect. So like, oh, I went into the crowd with the house lying on their side is how I'd say it.
Ah,
like, okay. I was walking over to Pat Jacob and...
So do you feel like when you cover those childhood or the Shetland experience, it will feel like a betrayal or it will be not so authentic when you do it in a very neutral accent now?
Yeah, I think I'm better at it now. And I'm better at it now because I'm actually better at sitting down and writing and knowing what my jokes are. Because I used to be just so... I used to just do more storytelling than stand-up originally when I started. But now because I'm measuring every word for the best beats for the joke... then I think it's in the writing process I change it. But I get so excited when I get to do a show in Shetland.
Mm.
Like when I did the tour for Marge, last year's Fringe show, I purposefully picked the last dates in Shetland for two reasons. Number one, the subject matter was so grim. I knew it was going to be really hard to do for my friends and family at home. I knew that would be the biggest emotional toll, would be doing it in Shetland. But the other reason I wanted to do it in Shetland was because I could talk more in dialect. Which is funny because when I started the show and I was talking more to the audience, it was very dialect. By the time I got to like the last third of the show, because it was so rehearsed in English, it was coming out as I did it down at the Fringe.
Oh.
Because I was just used to doing it in English. So by that point, even though I could have done it more in Shetland, because I practiced the words and the delivery so many times, I realised that it actually automatically just came out canapping by the time I got to last third.
Well, people in the crowd gave you the impression they were a bit startled by it, or they were like confused by it. Like, how come you were talking to us in our way of speaking, suddenly you've gone all down south English again?
I don't think folk really notice, because even in Shetland, I'll canap, depending on who I'm speaking to.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, you try not to, but then you just do automatically. There's a new movement in Shetland, it's been going on for a few years, which is a badge with canap and a line through it, like a no canapping badge. It's a lovely
no
idea.
No canapping?
Yeah.
To remind people not to do it?
Well, it's a lovely idea, because what it was there's so many people who've moved to Shetland or lived in Shetland for years, or perhaps they've just had English parents, so they never really spoke Shetland, but they can wear this badge, which means like, you don't need to canap to me. Like, I can understand Shetland. I let you, you feel free to speak Shetland.
Oh, so it's not a political movement
to say to Shetland,
stop accommodating other people. It's more like, I may not be able to speak like you, but I understand you.
Yeah, okay. And it's lovely, because then when folk wear a no canap badge, you're like, oh, you can speak Shetland to them, because they want you to speak to them how you normally speak.
But the idea of canapping is, I'm going to get into this because I want to come back to the thing you mentioned about your unifying the accent you're doing in Glasgow and London. I find it absolutely fascinating. I'm going to come to this first. Canapping is the complete opposite of an English tourist in Marbella. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I've never been to Marbella.
It's Spain, in Mallorca.
Is that bad tourism?
So canapping is on the basis of yourself in a very humble position. You feel like you do not deserve, you cannot demand other people. You take it for granted that people won't know the way you talk.
Yes.
That's a very humble position. An English tourist in Spain, I mean, it's not fair to say generic English, but like a Darren in Spain, when they try to say something, can I have blah, 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 and locals don't understand him, he would just repeat, except louder this time. Instead of using any body language or a little bit of local language.
Yeah.
And that's why I call Darren in Mallorca.
Darren in Mallorca.
Because Darren in Mallorca take himself so big, say that everyone must know the way I talk.
Yes.
And you all should know how I talk. So if you don't understand me, the obligation, the onus is onto you to get closer to me to understand me.
Oh, I see.
Instead of meeting halfway. A more sensible person will probably throw in a little bit broken Spanish, but Darren in Mallorca would just say, do you have any English breakfast? And I'm saying canapping is...
it's going to be either that or chips.
Yeah, from the big ego or sort of self-importance point of view, canapping is absolutely opposite of that, right?
Yeah, and I was in France for a month on a dig, an archaeological dig, and my dig supervisor, Gary, is this Glaswegian guy. He was really helpful because he's like, oh, if you ever get stuck and you need to ask a French person for help... And you don't know the French words you're asking for, this is going to sound ridiculous.
But
put on a French accent. And he's like, because the voice will be so much more understandable for them because you have this Shetland accent.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, where's the toilet? Be like, where's the toilet? It just helps.
So it's not mildly offensive.
But I think if France is okay. Like, you know, like if we're in Europe, I can do this.
But it could also be that they are so used to hearing other French person pronouncing the English word à la française, so they don't recognize the original pronunciation so quickly. By doing the offensive thing, it get them to, oh, you're talking about that a bit quicker.
Yeah, because at school when I first learned French, I thought it was an offensive thing to do a French accent. So I'd be like, je m'appelle Marie-Hélène. And the teacher said, no, je m'appelle. It's like, m'appelle. I just feel bad for doing that.
English, or do you speak Shetlandic, or do you speak English with a Shetland accent? How would you describe it?
So Shetland, we used to have a language called Norn, and Norn was like an old Nordic language, because until 1469 we were under Nordic rule
for a couple like 600 years or your
six to 800. It depends how early the settlers came.
This is a fascinating story, because I heard you mention it. It's like that Shetland and your rivalry, Orkney Islands, were given to Scotland, the Scottish King James I, a dowry. I was like, what? And apparently, Shetland wasn't worse that much compared to Orkney back then.
It's awful. Yeah, the dowry was meant to be 30,000 florins. But Norway and Denmark didn't have the money back then. So they gave Orkney, and they valued Orkney at only 22,000 florins. So the very last minute, like 2 years later, they just threw Shetland in as well.
I was checking this YouTube video, how people speak in Shetland. You have the occasional Scandinavian sound coming out. That language is now dead, like, unfortunately. The last known speaker was gone by 1926 or something.
Yeah.
But the language persevered in a way in quite a few vocabularies in modern day, how the Shetlandics talk. Almost every video, there's someone from Norway or Denmark or Iceland coming below. So, oh my God, I can recognize the sound. It's really similar to the Old Norse. And that's why, like, Scottish Gaelic is a Celtic language. But that's never part of the Shetland. The Shetland had a Norse language fused with the Scots. Scots language is like English spoken in Scotland, right? English the way spoken in Scotland.
Well, the sad thing is, it's kind of been politicized beyond just a discussion of a language. Because I think with this like movement of pro or anti-independence for Scotland, the Scots language has become, unfortunately, embroiled in it. Because Scots is technically a language. But I think people think of that as some kind of maneuver for independence. So that means there's a lot of hate to the Scots as a language. But I just think it's an indicator of how unilingual this country is.
Yes.
Because so many folks say, well, Scots can't be a language because I can understand almost all of it. I'm like, well, that can happen with languages. There can be languages that are very, very closely related, but are still
like Czech
different.
And Slovak, for example,
yeah.
I imagine.
So it's really...
People who hate...
Scots is technically a language.
People who hate the idea that Scots is a language, are they pro-Scottish independence or against Scottish independence?
I mean, I'm really generalising here, but I think that there is a kind of negative reaction to Scots as a language because they are against independence and think it's just like a tool of the independence movement. Is what I'm generalizing by saying it, because I just always find it so confusing as to why how many people would hate on the idea of Scots being a language. They say the same thing, they're like, oh.
So their idea is that by denying Scots is a separate language on its own, having its identity, that Scotland is also just a part of the United Kingdom. That the identity is the United Kingdom. So some of those people, when we're generalizing,
I think that might be where it comes from, which is whether you're pro or anti-independence, I think it's quite beautiful to have another language in this group of islands. Do you know what I mean? I think it's a nice thing having Scots, Gaelic and Cymraeg and English. It just adds to it. Is it Cymraeg? Is that the right term?
I'm not sure. I'm not an expert.
I'm just trying so hard not to just say Welsh. Do you know what I mean? But it's like...
But the beautiful thing about the Shetlandic is...
Can I say one point there?
Yes.
Just as a quick background to it. Yes, because we were the same as Orkney, Caithness, ancient Scotland, with this idea that we were Pictish because we have the same archaeology. But then we became Norse. So whatever our ancient language was would have been whatever I believe the Pictish language was.
We don't know what happened to the Aborigines on the island because the Viking came...
They call them the Skrallings.
Yeah, it is comedy with an accent, but the accent means like there's a lot of linguistic talk, and that's why
we're
geeking out on this.
I love this kind. And also, what's interesting is when we became Norse in 1469, when we were given over Scotland, the original agreement was like the laws, language, and land wanting to change, I think. But after about 100 or so years, they started giving us the gifts, they called them, of ministers and teachers to anglicise us, to get us speaking Scots, rather. And what happened was this started about 1600 in a huge effort to get rid of Norn. But there's a scholar called Jakob Jakobsen.
From Norway, right?
From Faroe.
From Faroe, okay.
Faroe, yeah, Faroese. So the Faroe Islands are between Shetland and Iceland. And Faroe to Denmark is what Shetland is to Scotland. But Faroe has a lot more autonomy. Jakob Jakobsen recognised how the Norn language is being decimated. So he actually travelled to Shetland and recorded over 10,000 words and place names and made this huge etymology for Shetland to record as much as he could. But by the time he got there, it was just words surviving in fractures. It wasn't the full language.
Oh.
But we have so much to thank Jakob Jakobsen for in preserving so many words that would have otherwise been lost.
Was it a conscious choice when you do a slightly different accent in Glasgow and in London in the past? Or it was just you get out and you somehow you just move to different speaks at that time?
I think, yeah, by the time I was coming to England, I had my voice set in Scotland for how I spoke on stage. And I think when I came into England, I probably connect more.
Yeah.
Because also I had to think about it, because when I came down to England, I couldn't be like, oh, you know, up in Shetland, because there's less of a chance of people knowing where Shetland is. So even my introductory jokes were more explanatory. And I think that whole thing put me in a mind frame of
you're filling the gap of their contact. They don't even know much about. And if you have to base your joke on Shetland, yeah.
And then I soon found out that I talked about Shetland too much for some audiences.
For people here or in Scotland?
Yeah, I just felt like I needed to talk about more relatable things that we can all get behind.
So, for example, you're saying you are knapping, making this more neutral. But when you say now, you say new, right?
New.
And
yeah.
You don't change that.
I'd probably do that on stage. I'd say no.
You do?
I think I do. Okay. The other day,
so that you're very comfortable with me. You don't feel like you had to change it.
Yeah, and also because we keep speaking about Shetland, then I tend to slip into the dialect.
Ah.
Especially because we're speaking about Shetland dialect, then it's you start going down the slide towards how you'd speak at home.
So I talked to you about me having to pause. Sometimes I even stop the podcast just to think, what was Marianne talking about? Because in some incidents, I thought you were talking about something else. And then from the context, I work it out backwards.
Yeah. Oh,
so when you say you used to be a town planner.
Yes.
But you pronounce something a bit more similar to time. I don't know how you say it.
Town.
But you're knapping with me right now. It's not tune. The way you say
tune planner?
Yes. Because when you say tomb, I say like tomb, like a graveyard.
Oh, like a tomb.
Yeah, because when you just do that sentence, it wouldn't make sense. And then, so for example,
I would love to plan tombs.
Imagine.
Oh my God, the statues.
Put a Nordic design on it.
It's kind of how my new show starts.
Just to avoid the trials from coming.
Yes.
So I'm saying, for example, if you say one sentence like, I wanted to be a town planner, when you say I wanted to be a tomb planner, just on that sentence alone, I'm not exactly sure what talking about. But later when you say, so I go to different cities to see how they built, then you can understand. You play with people's ignorance when it comes to Shetland a bit sometimes. And because I should mention it, but I'm giving it a trump. So we're talking about people outside Shetland or not in Scotland and their ignorance, right? So you were on a podcast and the host mentioned that didn't one winner of the Great Interior Design Master with Alan Carr renovate it and design something in Shetland? Oh no, you didn't do that, because what he talked about is an Australian guy who now lives in the Hebrides Island in Western Scotland. It's called the Hebrides, is that right?
Yeah, the Hebrides.
The Hebrides, and then up to the Isle of Skye. So he designed some of the...
I can't even mind what podcast this was. Are you not naming it? Because it would be a name and shame.
And...
Oh, I've not listened to that one back yet. I was so confused that day because I'd made all these notes for all my answers and I left them at home. So when I got to the podcast, I was like, damn it. Because I'd spent ages on funny answers.
I think you didn't know the program he was talking about. You've not watched it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no.
It was a contestant on the Great Interior Design Master.
Oh, okay.
But he lived with his boyfriend on the Hebrides Island.
Yeah.
And BBC made a six-part series about he doing local projects.
Okay.
But it's not Shetland. It's just another island in Scotland. And for him, it's potato. I thought it was like... It was an innocent mistake, but it was just the direct evidence of people knowing so little, probably caring so little about this island. And you are making use of that ignorance, because you would say ridiculous thing that in Shetland, everyone was born by the same woman, which is... I think it's a joke. You see the twink in her eyes. You're never quite sure.
She's so busy.
Okay, so
busy uterus.
You think that that one is the exaggeration, so obvious it's not true.
We're actually all bees.
But then you start to say that if this town hall, this room is in Shetland, I would know every single one of you. Say, ooh, is this still exaggeration? This sounds quite true right now. And there was one BBC special. You did a little clip about using Tinder in Shetland. And you're like, oh, this is my ex. This is my cousin. And running out of new people. Is that true, though?
It's funny because a lot of it's based in truth, and a lot of things, there's exaggerations. The early jokes are always like massive early jokes to get everyone on board with the idea.
Yeah.
It's a small island. We do know each other a lot. A lot of us are related. And then it's funny because I think sometimes that almost dismantles the rest of my set, because then I go on to true stories and I think people don't believe them.
Yes.
But like last night I was doing a preview of the show. Oh, it's quite a morbid show. It's quite dark and twisted in the sense of I grew up on a farm, so I was surrounded by birth and death and bodily functions all the time. But the more I talk about it, there's one line in the show where I talk about me and my brother having freedom in the hills, starting bonfires.
That was the idea, the example I was thinking about.
Peeling back the flesh in a tourist's head to see the colour of the skull beneath. And that line can often, like, I look at the eyes of audience members who think, is this true? And last night I felt the room being tense and I had to be like, let's stop for a second because we need to address about what in the show is real and what isn't.
Mm.
So they'd all relax. But then when I talked about the game Pitchfork and I had to tell them it's a real game, they all stressed out again.
Yeah, so...
Pitchfork is a fun game me and my brother played with a pitchfork.
So we did a show together in Ireland last month.
Kilkenny. Cats laugh.
Yeah, and when you do a short spot... That ignorance from people outside Shetland is an advantage you can employ.
It is, but it almost makes
But
me
then
sad
when it is a show, it can undo the later bit. And I think it also had to do with you have a quality, and it's been described by Stu on Some Lot podcast, and it's been described by some reviewers of your show. Some of them describe you as alien. Some of you, Mark, say you're like elf. There was also another alien. So I think a polite way to describe it is otherworldly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The boys are just like, you freak.
You're freak. No, because
you have on this planet.
You have ADHD. So sometimes I could see that, oh, Marjolaine zoned out. Because you have...
Have I done that on this?
A bit, not too much, but a
because
bit.
Because there's one bit when you're speaking when I wasn't zoned out at all. But I might have looked like that. Because this ear doesn't work so well. So sometimes to listen more, I'm just like... And it looks rude.
Okay.
It's from a childhood of fiddling.
Like. It's okay. I know you have ADHD, so I totally understand that. But basically, in your brain, there's a slightly different, I wouldn't say it's a parallel universe, but it's a world that's somehow overlapping with the real world we're living in, but not exactly 100%.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would agree.
Overlapping, right? So that's what I feel. When you're doing a short spot, that's sort of otherworldly combined with people's ignorance about Shetland, and you start to talk about your childhood or growing up in Shetland, you can play around with the ignorance. Whereas now when you do an hour show and you're talking about your real life experience being authentic, that persona at the start of the show and the later part, you have to find a way to smoothly transition and smooth out, right?
Yeah, that's why with this new show, I'm trying to do a bit where every section resembles what I felt like in that section.
But do you feel, when you listen...
I'm hoping that comes across and it doesn't just seem too jarring.
But when you listen back to the recording, did you notice whether your accent also shifted from a more Shetlandic when you're going over the childhood bit to a more neutral one later?
Oh, I don't know. I was going to listen back to it tomorrow, so I'm going to hear. Yeah, there might be a shift in accent. I've not thought about that. There's one part of speaking Shetland that's really funny for me. In school, me and my friends often just spoke like I'm speaking now.
As well?
Yeah, because I think when you're taught to read and pronounce letters and pronounce words, there's a strange kind of like anglicization that comes over children at school age. Not every child, but I know that with my mom being Dutch, there was swathes in my life where I spoke less Shetland or more Shetland. And it's really interesting because I think school especially, and so my friends, then I'd speak like this the whole time with them. and you've not met Shetland.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because just talking to you about it today, it makes you realize that I think a lot of it was like as I got older and more conscientious about the fact that my heritage is Shetland. And it's funny, I say mother tongue, but technically it's my father tongue because my dad's a Shetlander. So it's kind of funny because sometimes when I leave home and do things like comedy, I'm always thinking, am I doing Shetland proud? Am I talking about Shetland in a way that I would talk about Shetland in Shetland? Do Shetlanders think I'm funny? Are Shetlanders pleased with what I'm doing? And am I using an authentic voice, not just for Shetland, but for myself as well? And I am always worried that it's like funny because when I was a child, I remember being told I didn't speak it in a Shetland accent by other kids at school because I wasn't as broad as they were.
By their standard.
Yeah. So even in Shetland, there's like people are much more broad as I, or have both Shetland speaking parents, or never really knapped. And then I feel like I would be a fraud when I spoke Shetland.
When
to the point where with some other Shetlanders, we will actually speak like this to each other.
When they say broad, what do you mean by that? What's the definition?
Like
real? Like authentic?
Broad is like a broadly spoken dialect, so speaking more Shetland. And I think it took years to actually realise it's like, no, I've got every right to speak Shetland and I should because that will preserve the dialect because the more people that speak it, the more people that use the words, the longer it will survive. And I'm a huge advocate for if anyone moves to Shetland and they want to start using words and pronunciations of Shetland, they are more than welcome to because that is what will preserve our dialect.
So for some people who are, how to say that, who had a very orthodox and a conservative view, your accent doesn't sound 100% like mine and you're not authentic enough, you shouldn't use it. And that kind of attitude will actually kill this
exactly,
language.
Yeah. And as a child, when people said that to me, I would actually take it to heart and I'd actually be like, oh, I shouldn't use Shetland words because it doesn't sound right when I say it. Which is also funny because within Shetland, this group of over 100 islands, I think 15 of them are lived on.
There's not one Shetland language.
No, there's so many different accents, even within Shetland.
Yeah.
So it's funny as well, because I used to be slagged off sometimes by saying things a certain way. Then I find out that's actually my corner of Shetland, how we would say that word.
If you can recall, when you talk to your brother, do you talk like you talk in school or do you talk in a very broad sense then? Does that make sense to you, my question?
I don't talk that much Shetland when I talk to my brother.
Because when you talk to your brother, your mum is in the same household sitting.
Yeah. I'm more likely to speak Shetland talking to my sister than my brother. I don't know why. I don't know if it's because me and my brother grew up watching TV and quoting things to each other the whole time and speaking in like cartoon voices.
You talk to your father in Shetlandic.
Yeah.
You talk to your mother, whatever that is.
Like, yeah, varies.
And you talk to your sister in Shetlandic, but you talk to your brother in a more neutral English.
Yeah, it's really weird. I haven't thought about it this deeply. Like, even my sister, I don't talk to her so broad, and then if you start speaking about Shetland things, there might be more Shetland pronunciations.
So the clapping also, even exists in a house.
But, like, me and my brother did a metal music podcast together, and I was on it for 5 years, I think. And on that, I don't think I ever spoke Shetland because it was a podcast, so we were knapping.
I feel like I really got you thinking right now.
Yeah, it's really funny. But I remember my brother getting really mad at me when I was a child because I started talking like Sue Bear from Sooty and Sweep because I loved her so much. I'd be talking really posh like this all the time. This is how I wanted to talk for a very long time. And he'd punch me in the arm. So I don't know. I think growing up with our mum having a non-Shetland accent meant that within the house, sometimes we speak less Shetland than when we're out and about. It's weird.
You know, when I just point out to come from a couple of sounds you pronounce is the word I'm thinking, right? I've been telling myself in recent years when I talk to someone and I didn't understand a word immediately, don't challenge them or don't suggest this is not how the word is pronounced. Wait until whether I can work it out in a context. Because I know what it feels like to know a language that's under threat. And everyone is entitled to the way they speak. That's what I believe. People may not think it's rude. Imagine if you say that. So I gone down south now. When you say gone down south new, and I say, do you mean now? For some people, that is not offensive. But for me, I think you can avoid doing that because you can embrace how other people speak. And that's my own personal beliefs. I wouldn't have asked you that question if you were not doing this podcast.
I totally appreciate that. I think because Shetland's a mixture of pronunciations and words, that when people ask me, that's fine, because I've not used many of the words today. But I'm like, oh yeah, it's just a pity boy. And people are like, pardon? Because pity is Shetland for small.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are like, what did that word mean? Then I don't think it I don't get bothered in that sense because then I can't remember if I've said a word in a Shetland pronunciation or I've said a full Shetland word.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. But yeah, but it's amazing. I'm so glad that Taiwanese is still a language because that's brutal.
Yeah,
that's a brutal treatment to try and get rid of the language. And when you get rid of a language, it's horrible because you get rid of your mother tongue. And also the mother tongue is usually like special as well because it just carries the essence and words and terminology and endearment and just the sound of a country.
It is,
so,
but
so
we have the same thing when you describe them, because I live in a capital city, so I'm much more fluent in Mandarin. So if you ask me, honestly, what's my mother tongue? I would say emotionally, I would say Taiwanese, but truthfully, it is probably Mandarin.
Oh, that would be a very good way if I spoke about Shetland, because emotionally, it's Shetland dialect. And when I'm on my own, I speak to myself in Shetland dialect. Unless I'm like practicing an acceptance speech or something. But if I'm just by myself speaking to myself, I'll speak in Shetland.
I can't. I think I'm below you. If I think to myself, I still think in Mandarin. So if today I know I'm getting on a podcast and they were interviewing me in Taiwanese, I would be shedding myself. My Taiwanese is not that fluent, but I try my best because I live with my grandma. I am lucky enough for people of my generation who grew up in the capital city. My Taiwanese is considered relatively okay. But when I speak to someone who speaks Taiwanese much, much more fluently, they would think my accent carries too much Mandarin influences. And they would say something like, I don't understand you. Don't speak that.
That's brutal.
That accent is ugly. Could you stop speaking Taiwanese?
Actually.
It's hurting my ears. And I just thought, I can try to make it better, but you kind of have to embrace me. I'm trying my best. What you're doing is actually helping kill the language.
Exactly. Yeah. Because you're actually stopping people from speaking Taiwanese. And it's the same thing as like going through that process of thinking, oh, maybe I shouldn't speak that, to be like, no, it's my right, and actually I want to, because I want to continue this heritage and keep it as a modern living thing. Like, if the word is being spoken in your mouth, if it's on your breath, it is literally alive because it's been carried on the breath of a living person.
I was talking about you being otherworldly.
Yeah.
But the other quality of you is you have a disarming aura around you. Very endearing and disarming. Even though you are batshit crazy and weird, somehow people are drawn to you. And those are very effective comedy tools. But the other one, it has to do with your accent. When people hear the accent because of the Nordic influences, it automatically takes us to a storytelling setting. You can feel like you're outside camping, sitting by the fire, and you're telling a story. Your accent gives that atmosphere. So when your accent becomes too neutral, there's a little bit sense of, it's a shame. I know it kind of, you want to make people understand, but I think it's such a treat to hear you do your comedy in the Shetland accent, to have that storytelling quality. Apart from the fact that you still play around with our ignorance.
I'm genuinely going to go back and look at my show and think about what
I can use. Am I overanalyzing something?
No, it's good. I think being overly analytical is a really good thing when it comes to being a comedian, because actually you can sometimes coast by like, oh, I got a laugh there, but it's like, why did you get a laugh? Can you expand on that joke? Can you use that for the greater structure
bigger,
of the show?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not just the words we say, it's how we say them, but then I guess also how we pronounce them.
Yes, but I was talking about the storytelling quality.
Yeah.
But it would be misleading to say it's just because of the accent that you have the storytelling quality, because storytelling is something you grew up with. You have this rebuttal to people say that, oh my God, you're from Shetland. How do you even do comedy? It must be very difficult. And I think you're partially offended or pissed. It's like, seriously, we are such a remote island. We have to find a way to entertain ourselves. And you do lots of creative activities with your family, and there are lots of festivals, like from the Norse tradition, that you actually been trained in your daily life to become a comedian in a way. You just need to cross that step, right?
Yeah.
So the storytelling is not just the accent. The accent quickly win people over with the perception, but it's the actual storytelling skills, which you've been trained over and over when you were in Shetland growing up, not least because you also were an actor before comedian first. You started in theatre.
I did like youth theatre in Shetland. So I did like summer schools and evening classes and drama.
There's a bit of a condescending attitude from comedians sometimes to storytelling. They'll feel like, oh, storytelling are people who can't do jokes, which I think is so stupid, because there's a lot of comedians who don't do enough jokes, but they can't tell a good story either. Storytelling is a complete different technique. a completely different set of skills in a way. And you are able to combine both beautifully.
That's really nice.
I really meant it. You explained it on another podcast really well. As a comedian, you want jokes here and there. So you have to keep the audience entertained, laughing. Of course, in a longer show, you want to keep that on the hook. You want them to want to know what's happening. Because use a narrative structure to make an hour, but people not get feel bored or distracted, right? But your primary focus as a storyteller is to want people to listen to you and they want to follow you to know what's happening. So that's not a tool. That is the aim of storytelling. So if you think about that, when you are telling a story, but you cannot rely on a joke here and there, how to get people engaged is actually very difficult. And that's why I'm saying I don't approve the stand-up comedian's sort of snobbish attitude towards storytelling, because chances are you think you can do it. No, you can't. Without jokes, you won't be able to tell a good story.
Oh my gosh, I think they're doing it behind my back because I've not had that to my face.
What do you mean?
I'm like, you're talking about like a snobbish attitude to storytelling, and I felt like people have been very nice to me about my shows and warm up too.
Mm.
So this is news to me.
Do you not know that? Like some.
Is this like one of those general tropes where some people are like, oh, that's not very good comedy?
Some people would do that. Like, you know how English people use the language? I don't think it is in your.
I'm glad I've been totally ignorant about this.
No. I don't think it applies in your case.
Yeah.
I think that. Like, I had to bring it up in some of your part show, because Mario Lane has a different journey. So she started in youth theater first. So yeah. You're used to performing.
Yeah.
And you were doing an hour long show before doing the short comedy club set.
Yes, backwards.
So you're doing it backwards. Some of your older show, people would say the show was great. She's really great stage presence, but she can punch up the show a little bit in the old days.
Yeah,
right?
And I suppose I used to say that about myself. It's like, I'll tell a massive 5-minute story and then have one punchline at the end. Like, ta-da, that's what I used to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is the criticism from the comedy reviewer may be fair, but also...
I do remember getting criticized for that.
Yeah, but some people, when they sneer at storytelling, they ignore the fact that they may not be able to do that at all.
Yeah.
It is a different set of skills.
Yeah, and I
Why are you lost for words right now?
I don't know. I think my brain just imploded. But yeah, because I think a lot of old jokes as well used to be like a really good story. And I think I my favorite kind of show that I like to attend, and I know comedy's subjective and it's personal to me, but my favorite kind of show is where I go and I learn something as well as laugh.
Yes.
Like a nerd. But just like I like to
like
hear a story.
Podcast.
Yeah, go on a journey and hear a story and see all the different moments in it of like peril and trial and escapism as well and come back round again. Mm. That's my favorite kind of show personally. So that's what I've been trying to do. By full on just putting folk tales inside my stories. I'll take that story and plop it in.
This recording has not gone the way I thought it would
be. I'm sorry.
No, but in a very positive way. Due to time restriction, we have to end this podcast recording soon. But I wanted to say, I don't want to forget, Marjolaine is doing Edinburgh Fringe Festival again this year. A fantastic show. I've seen the preview of it. It's phenomenal. It's called O, and you will be at...
Monkey Battle Comedy Club in the Hive One, which is this big smelly room at 5:40.
Yes, and I want to remind people why I recommend the show. So I watched her show last year, March, her 2023 outing at Edinburgh Fringe Festival, one of the best review shows. There were some 5-star reviews. You don't get that easily. It's phenomenal in that Mario Lane was weaving together a folklore of Selkin, which in Shetland is a part seal, part human.
The Selkies.
And you blended that with your story. So you're moving from anecdotes of your life and gradually you're doing the big reveal. And the Selkie story was mentioned bit by bit and eventually everything makes sense. Without giving too much away, because I don't want to spoil your surprise, I just want to say there is a Guardian interview of Mario Lane in June. It's a wonderful article, but if you read every word of it, it might spoil you the surprise in her last show and this show you're going to see in Edinburgh this August. So you can read a bit, but don't read too much.
I'm saying don't read The Guardian.
No, I can't.
Just stick to right-wing publications.
We still want people to support the independent media, and also that article will attract people to come to see your show. But if you read a little bit, just have a flair of it. And trust me, Marilyn is a wonderful comedian. This show also you talk about is the battle between, is it middle?
Simidr, the mother of the sea, and Taran, the spirit of winter.
So she, once again, with a beautiful Shetlandic folklore with the story. And I don't want to say any more about that because I think you should leave the surprise all intact in one go.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I've never even spoken Shetland in this podcast. Do you want some Shetland?
Yes, please. A Shetland poem.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I'll do one that I've not done before because the boys got another poem.
Or do and they were making fun of the Lucky Zoo.
Yeah, that one.
And they cut the whole joke poem on the bog cotton.
Yeah. Oh, so here's a different poem. It goes, "It o'er upon a wheel can't hill, was waters rise to grind a mill. Auld Mansie begat him a crew to groom kale for mutton brew. For Auld Mansie ne'er taught him hail, wheat sheep kegs and cogs of kale. New Mansie was a godly man, as ever Sammy David sang, ne'er telt words that werena true, ne'er swore by God or deal, except when Cunnan said his kale."
Oh, I love the cadence of it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
What were you talking about? I hope it's not something. I hope you were just
doing it. It's so rude. It's about a man called Mansi who builds a stone structure, a circular stone structure, so he can grow kale in it. So in Shetland, it's such rough weather and it's often very windy. So when we grow kale, we first have this like 5 or 6 foot high walled circular building to grow the seedlings in. And then when they're strong enough, you can plant them out in a larger yard.
I think you guys do understand Shetland a bit more. Even to grow kale, they have to build a wall around.
Yeah, and to plant it, me and Dad did it recently. When you plant it, you soak the kale seeds in water for 24 hours and then you spoot them out. And spoot is when you take a gulp of water, we say take a gulp of water and moot, and go, and you spit the water and the seed out in one go.
So originally the story was really beautiful. I thought it would be like a wonderful end to the podcast, but you just ended with that noise. So I thought maybe not.
Me spooting seed out with my dad in the crate.
Okay. I feel like we didn't get to cover enough about you as a performer, but we talked so much about Shetland. I'm sure you'll be happy about
this is a suitable podcast.
We've literally been told that we ran out of time, and that's the wonderful recordings. I'm going to thank my guests for coming on today. It has been your guest, Marjolaine Robertson, and I've been your host, Quang Wen. So go for lunch right now. See you. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for having me. Cheerio. Okay. Do wheel and persevere.
Done.
Skal de hinder quaff. It means drink the last drop.